Well, hello again, everyone. We're back now after our luncheon speech and our good luncheon fare to start our last two panels of the day. And the first one is named lovingly CUI or See You Later, Part 2, because we had such a panel a couple of years ago. But let me mention quickly before we begin that we have two late-breaking handouts for you folks being handed out right now. One of them pertains to this panel right here. That consists of an expanded subpage on the CGS website. The CGS website, I'm sure that you're all familiar with that, or hope that you can make use of it from time to time. We spend a lot of time, and the Dean's Fellows work very hard on that. In the pseudo-secrecy section, we have a subpage that lists 124 safeguarding labels that had been used by agencies as of a couple of years ago when we set that up. And now we have added to that subpage the subcategories that were identified on the CUI registry that these folks will talk about that was published on November 4th of this past year. So that's the first handout that you have. It contains not only the 124 distinct safeguarding labels, but also the roughly 85 or 87 CUI preliminary subcategories as part of the ongoing process that this panel will discuss. The second handout has to do with White House visitor logs, and I need not take the time of this panel here. We can talk about that before the next panel begins. All I need to do is tell you that we're very pleased here at CGS and the law school to have this panel in particular because we're able to devote it to the work of these hardworking officials in the office of, the Information Security Oversight Office, ISU, who work not only on government-wide classification matters, as if that's not difficult enough, because you've heard about concerns about overclassification, declassification, but have been given the sometimes but not always thankless task, it won't be always thankless because we will thank them today, thankless task of serving as the executive agent for controlled unclassified information, which again has to do with safeguarding labels, designations on records that don't create FOIA exemptions. They just have to do with handling and dissemination and things that happen within the agency's four walls largely. That doesn't necessarily mean that something is exempt and would be withheld under the FOIA. And we have the two top officials working in that area, and we can devote this panel to them. But I won't say anything more about them, because our moderator, who's sitting in the middle, Sharon Bradford Franklin, will do that. Let me just mention that Sharon is senior counsel at the Constitution Project, and that she's also a member of the CGS Advisory Board. And let me just take a moment to say that one of the real positives, the pluses of having a 15-member advisory board is that CGS gets to draw upon the membership of that board to serve as moderators at our program. And indeed, we've had three advisory board members as moderators of our programs today thus far, including Sharon. And I'll just turn you right over to her.
Thank you, Dan. Welcome to our panel. I work in my day job for the Constitution Project. For those of you not familiar with the Constitution Project, we are a nonprofit based here in Washington, D.C., whose mission is to promote constitutional safeguards. And we generally do that by working with our various bipartisan committees that take on challenging constitutional issues and develop consensus-based recommendations for policy reforms. What brings me particularly here, in addition to working with Dan on his advisory board, is a report of our Liberty and Security Committee from 2009 entitled Reining in Excessive Secrecy, Recommendations for Reform of the Classification and Controlled Unclassified Information Systems. So some of you may be very familiar with what CUI is and have heard that before. Others may have no idea what that means. So just let me take a moment before we go too far with this panel. CUI stands for Controlled Unclassified Information. So by definition, it is unclassified. But it is information that is sensitive in one way or another so that some degree of safeguarding is required, and government agencies don't want that information shared with everyone or posted up on their websites and so forth. And going back a number of years, there were various counts of how many such categories we had. There was one count by, may have been Information Security Oversight Office, or another government agency that came up with 107. The Collaboration on Government Secrecy, as you know from your handout, had 124. But a lot of different labels, some of which you may have heard of, most famously stamped on lots and lots of things, FOUO, or for official use only, and SBU, or sensitive but unclassified. So there's been an effort over the number of years, started in the George W. Bush administration and continued more vigorously in the Obama administration, to reform this system. And the goals were partly to rein in, there's so many different confusing categories, and people didn't know what to do with them. They meant different things at different agencies. But in many ways, at least from Constitution Project's perspective, that's sort of a symptom of the problem. The bigger problem is we want to promote information sharing. And so that's been what we and a lot of folks in the openness advocacy community have hoped will continue to be the goal of the CUI reform effort, is to promote information sharing. So we've had the pleasure, my organization as well as my colleagues, who I'll introduce in a moment, in the NGO world, of working with the administration as it's moved forward on this reform effort. And a little over a year ago, as I think Dan mentioned, we got an executive order from President Obama, November 4th, 2010, Executive Order 13556, which states a plan for treating this information, to promote information sharing. And now we're looking about, 14 months later, how is that going? And it is still certainly, as you'll hear from the government officials working closely on this, a work in progress. But we will today get their views on how that implementation is going, challenges going forward, their plans going forward, as well as from the openness community, thoughts on what's been good and bad so far, and hopes and fears going forward. Before I give you a little bit more of an introduction of my panelists here, I just want to highlight from Constitution Project's perspective, looking at the executive order, some of what I think are the most positive features of that we really hope will be carried forward in the implementation going forward. First and foremost is, when you look at all these categories, you know, official use only, and where do they come from, the executive order narrows what the justification for a label can be. It can only come from applicable law, regulation, and government-wide policies. And I know that my colleagues here will speak more about what that means. But I think that's a huge step forward in narrowing what can be the source for these kind of safeguarding and restricting policies to begin with. For anything that really is sensitive, it's not just, well, we thought so and we've always thought so at our agency. Second is, the executive order does not include any provisions for sanctions for failure to follow the rules. So trying to stay away from making this another part of the classification system, where there are legitimately, of course, sanctions for disclosing classified information. This, by definition, is unclassified information. So we want to keep this steered away from looking too much like part of the classification regime. Third, and I'm sure we'll hear more about this from the panelists, is it very clearly separates the CUI regime from FOIA. These are two separate classifications, two separate things, and we want to keep those separate. Fourth, and this is something near and dear to me at the Constitution Project, is it states that you cannot rely on a CUI marking to withhold documents from the other branches of government, from Congress and the judiciary. Too often we've seen in the past where executive branch officials will say to a congressional staffer, oh, I can't share this with you because it's stamped FOUO, which we think is absurd, and so it's good to have the backing that shouldn't happen going forward. This is supposed to promote information sharing, even if it shouldn't be up on a website. And finally, it talks about requiring the development of procedures for decontrol. The sensitivity of these documents should not last forever, and so that's let's see how that goes in the implementation, but another positive. So let me, you do have the full bios, I know, in your handouts. I just want to highlight a few things from the bios of our panelists, so you know who's talking to you, and then we'll move forward. I'm going to introduce them in alphabetical order, but I think we're seated in the order in which they will actually speak to you. So first seated just here to my left is Gavin Baker, who works in OMB Watch's Federal Information Policy Program as a Federal Information Policy Analyst. And previously, he researched copyright and internet policy at the American Library Association. Seated on my other side here is John Fitzpatrick, who is the new, I guess it's
we can still say new, right, as of August, Director of the Information Security Oversight Office, or ISOO, at NARA, at the National Archives and Records Administration. And immediately before joining ISOO, he served as the Assistant Deputy Director of National Intelligence for Security, where he basically advised the Director of National Intelligence, the DNI, on matters regarding the protection of national intelligence and intelligence sources and methods. And he's had a long career in the intelligence community, including serving at the CIA. Next in alphabetical order, sitting over here, is Michelle Richardson, who is legislative counsel with the American Civil Liberties Union's Washington Legislative Office, where she focuses on national security and government transparency issues. And she previously served as counsel to the House Judiciary Committee, also specializing in national security and civil rights and constitutional issues. And finally is Patrick Fiscuso, sitting on the far end this way, who is the associate director for the Controlled Unclassified Information Office at the National Archives and Records Administration. And he has 20 years of experience in working at all levels in government security, oversight, and policy organizations. So with that, we're going to have our two ISOO folks speak first and tell you a bit about implementation so far and going forward. And then we will have Gavin and Michelle follow up. After that, hopefully, I'll have time to ask a few questions, and then we'll open it up for your questions. Thank you.
Okay, so I'll...
You're going to go first?
Okay. So thank you, Sharon, and also to Dan for the invitation and the opportunity to come here. As Sharon said, I'm the director of ISOO and have been since August. So yes, indeed, I still claim the new tag in my first year. And so a terrific opportunity, and particularly because I'll say stepping out of the intelligence community into the larger executive branch on broader issues, and to have the opportunity to come and address a forum like this, attend a forum like this, and interact with you who are here in this setting and in others. It's a terrific, enriching experience, and I'm enjoying it quite a bit. I'm hopeful that bringing the perspective that I do from the national security side, but also a willingness to, and a track record for challenging many of the behaviors in that activity are helpful both to enhancing everybody's understanding here and as I conduct the responsibilities of the office. That's been my approach so far, and I hope to keep that going. We're going to split our 10 minutes. We're going to try to keep this thing light and moving along so that we can get to the Q&A portion, which I think is in many cases most helpful to you as audience members, particularly after that delicious lunch filled with simple carbohydrates. And so I invite you to stand up and keep the circulation going and hope we'll keep your attention. The Controlled Unclassified Information Program is instituted, as Sharon said, in a follow-up to an executive order that was published issued in November of 2010. The story of SBU and CUI goes back much farther than that, but we're going to keep our comments to the program that was established by that executive order and start the movie at that point. And give you, our intention is to give you an update on the activities that have followed the issuance of the order, what we've accomplished so far, what is underway right now, and what lies ahead. This will follow roughly the outline of a report to the President, the first annual report to the President, which is required by that executive order, which was produced by the CUI office in ISOO, presented to the President on the anniversary of the executive order, and is now can be found on the CUI website. So I draw your attention to that, archives.gov/CUI. The executive order, as Sharon provided an outline of it, levied some requirements on the National Archives as executive agent, and the archivist visited those responsibilities on my office and what is currently my position. the first task that it set was really to engage in an interagency process to solicit what are the categories and subcategories of information. You have the product of that here in the back half of the handout. I want to emphasize exactly how robust that interagency process was, and then what the CUI office did with the information that they collected. The executive order requires that that we consult with the affected agencies and that they submit, and did by May of last year, all of their suggested categories for inclusion in a registry, which would be an authoritative listing of categories, subcategories, and the government policies and statutes that that have established them. It's important to know that in between the presentation by the agencies and the publication of the registry, which happened on the 4th of November in 2011, and which you can also find at that same web address, there was a terrific amount of research done by the CUI office staff, many if not all of whom, nearly all of them are in the room here, and so we salute their hard work, which was to sift through all those submissions, all those contentions, if you will, by agencies that we need to include this on the list, and to go through a validation and verification process there to examine the statutory basis or the regulatory basis and really make a decision if it's in or out. I think the order made the structure of the order to rely on existing statutory regulatory citation for a category is an important designation. Our charge is not to overhaul what is or isn't controlled unclassified information, at least not at this point, but is to simply to clarify and to validate and to provide a registry. Oh, terrific. To provide a registry so that folks can determine whether something is in. And if it is in, as you can see in the 16 categories that are listed behind me, if it is in, then you can dive deep into the specific citation that authorizes that category to have some control over safeguarding and dissemination. And so those are important tenets of the executive order, and they were the basis of interaction with all the government agencies, who then coalesced around common themes, and you can see that many of the themes that are listed on that list behind me are indeed common. Oop, we've gone. We want to go to one while we're here. If I can control it, I would love to. If you can put it on number one and then tell me how to click to the next one, that'd be great. No, that's fine. So, but my point here is that agencies didn't simply pitch their things in and they were included. And what the staff did was, I think, a very objective sifting and organization of these things, and then they got the interagency buy-in. So when you go to the registry and you read about a category, you can see a common definition that's accepted by all government agencies for what is a transportation category, what is a law enforcement category, and then the specific citation for that in statute. Those are the requirements that the executive order set out for the first year, and they were achieved and happily on time, and I think in an open and rigorous process. Another 2011 requirement by agencies is to begin to figure out how they are going to implement a common structure for marking, safeguarding, disseminating, decontrolling information. And that is in the form of compliance plans, which is an agency-specific expression of how they intend to manage controlled and classified information within their organization, and how they will give policy guidance, who will do that, and how they will inspect themselves for performance. So at this point, what I'd like to do is turn it over to Pat. Pat's going to walk you through the concepts of those compliance plans and the policy guidance development process that lies ahead for us in 2012.
Yes, and I'd like to also emphasize something else in connection with the law, regulation, and government-wide policy that formed the basis for any category of CUI And one of the major accomplishments of our office was to actually team with the Office of Information Policy to issue a to have a joint issuance. That joint issuance is available on our website, further emphasizing the point that we're doing this in an open manner. That joint issuance is on our website that makes clear that FOIA exemptions are not to be the basis for the establishment of any category of controlled unclassified information, nor should the markings be used for any FOIA determination. At the end of the day, it is the information, and at the end of the day, it is discretionary and not mandatory. And so I think that was a major accomplishment, actually, in connection with the development of the registry. One thing I'd like to also emphasize that was stated, I think Dan had good intentions in his statements to in introducing us. There is nothing temporary about the categories and the subcategories that have been established and are online. There are 16 categories and 74 subcategories of the most common categories of, and subcategories of information in the government, and we are building upon it. And so I think that this is something that I have to emphasize. This is not a temporary thing. With the publication online, these are actually the official categories and subcategories. Now, moving on to the actual implementation, there is a requirement in the executive order that agencies submit to us compliance plans with interim target dates. Target dates related to what? Related to how they will establish governance within their agency for implementation of the program, how they will devise policy to implement the program within their agency, how they will move on to also looking at how they will self-inspect, how they will take a look at their IT and make sure that they are doing a gap analysis as to where they are right now and where they have to be, and how they will train their people in the program. And so we have received 53 of these compliance plans. We are currently analyzing them. We've developed a framework for analysis so that we can then begin some very tough work over the next year in working with the agencies and the Office of Management Budget to set implementation deadlines for the program, phased implementation. So there are various ways that this can be done. We are contemplating some of these ways. One may be that phased implementation takes place with a community of agencies or with certain groupings or at certain times. It's a very complex business when you're talking about the executive branch implementing a major program of this sort. So this is one aspect of our work. The other aspect, of course, is that we'll continue to update the registry. But in dovetailing something that the director has just mentioned, it's the development of implementation policy, something that will make this program walk and talk. We developed a high-level policy, initial implementation policy, within the 180-day deadline that was set by the executive order from its issuance. But now we need to become a little bit more specific, and there are areas that we have to address. These areas concern markings, safeguarding, dissemination, decontrol. One thing I'd like to emphasize in all of this is that the development of this policy is taking place in consultation not only with the agencies, but with representatives of public interest groups, state and local and tribal representatives, to obtain their input and views in a very substantive way in order to craft policy that works for information sharing. Another thing I'd like to emphasize about this guidance is that it has to work in the long term. It is not something that we are looking for a short-term fix for. It is something that has to work 10 years from now. CUI must work. So when we do all of this over the coming year, we have our focus on making this program a reality. I don't want to go into too much more. I think I'll leave some for the question and answer period, so that I'm sure you've got some questions in your mind. And I think it would be apropos to what we're discussing if we have time for questions.
Okay. I'd want to add just one more thing, and it relates to the timelines on the chart that's behind us. As Pat says, the work of that's ahead of us right now that we're going through with agencies right now is in this guidance development area on these specific topics. We have given ourselves 2012 in order to do that, which opens a window, as we were talking about it, for implementation beginning next year. We're trying to manage the expectations of everyone to say these things will be phased and implemented in different ways over time, but we are putting ourselves on the clock for the guidance development part so that agencies know that implementation is a real thing and it's visible in the near term. Their specific plans that are required by the executive order will be amended as this guidance becomes clear. Then they'll be able to determine what it will take within their agency, both from a resources, training, and a timeline standpoint. But as this chart indicates, our intention is to open that window as soon as it's practical, and we think that working on these very complex areas of guidance through this year will allow us to begin to manage expectations towards implementation beginning in about a year's time.
Ultimately, it is a program, and it's a program with uniformity. So you see 74 subcategories and 16 categories, but just keep in mind the big difference between that and the patchwork system that presently exists, because the word is policy. There's a big difference between 107 policies and one uniform policy that governs all of these categories and subcategories. One uniform policy regarding markings, one uniform policy on all of the different aspects of implementation that I've talked about.
Thank you both. Okay, Gavin?
Thank you, Sharon, and thank you, Dan, to the Collaboration on Government Secrecy for having me. And thanks to John and Pat for that excellent overview. First, I have an embarrassing confession to make. I have an information security problem of my own. I brought my little laptop with the notes for this presentation. I bought this a couple years ago. I don't use it that often, but it's pretty handy for cases like this. So I was going to look at my notes on it, except when I got here, I realized that I don't know the password to my computer.
Oh, my gosh.
So luckily, I can access the notes from my phone. So I apologize. I'm not checking Twitter while I'm talking. This is the way that I have to
see. Too much control.
Thank you for your applause.
Yes.
Well, I thought that I would use this opportunity to look at where we've come on CUI. So as Sharon mentioned, I'm a policy analyst at ONB Watch. Our concern about CUI has been that it would result in the undue restriction of public access to government information. And the concern has been that there were lots of categories. They were created ad hoc by agencies without oversight, and that the categories had vague definitions, which sort of created this perfect storm, a real breeding ground for unchecked secrecy. And in fact, you know, repeated studies showed that agencies themselves didn't know what these categories meant and were not using them consistently. So our concern was this would result in an outcome where there would be significant uncertainty about whether information could be shared, with whom, and under what circumstances, and that ultimately this would result in withholding information that the public should be able to access. So that's what we wanted to see fixed. That's what we wanted to see restricted or prevented from by CUI reform. So I'm going to do a bit of then and now to give a sense of where we were and where we are now. Leading up to the 2008 elections, OMB Watch coordinated a project to develop a set of recommendations to the next administration, ultimately became the Obama administration. Many of you in this room or your organizations participated in that effort to bring together our organizations from across the open government and good government communities and develop consensus about what we wanted to see happen. CUI, there were several recommendations about CUI in that report. The report identified CUI as a high priority area for the community. I wanted to go through this report that came out in November 2008 and walk through what we recommended and ultimately the state of where we are today. I think it's very telling about how far we've come on CUI reforms. And it's also, I think, an interesting look at the role that NGOs have played in the CUI system, and particularly in the reforms that the Obama administration has put into motion. So here's what we said in the 21st Century Right to Know report that we wanted the CUI system to do. We said we wanted it to direct agencies to reduce their use of information control markings unless there's a statute, regulation, or policy directive that justifies special safeguarding or dissemination controls. So thumbs up or thumbs down for those of you who know if that's what happened. Almost word for word, that's what the executive order says. In fact, the executive order is even perhaps a little stronger than that, in that rather than policy directive, it specifies a government-wide policy, so something like an executive order, an OMB directive, not an internal agency policy. And that's really critical to the success of the system in terms of its transparency and its accountability. We wanted there to be a presumption that information not be labeled as CUI. So that's also a thumbs up. Almost word for word, in the executive order, if there's significant doubt about whether information should be designated as CUI, it's not CUI. We wanted it to be clear that the purpose of CUI is to facilitate information sharing between agencies and between the federal government and state, local, tribal partners. Again, almost word for word, in the CUI executive order, its first section where it lays out the purpose, this is the purpose of the CUI system. We wanted the CUI system to include measures to reduce unnecessary control. Here's where things get a little more mixed. We said that we wanted the system to encourage employee challenges to improper labeling. That is not the case in the CUI system. There's no feature that does that. We wanted it to institute a system for the public to challenge improper labeling, like you have in the classified world with mandatory declassification reviews. In the CUI system, there's no such feature. So if you as a member of the public want access to a document and you're told this document is CUI, it has statutory restrictions about who we can give it to, and you say, I don't think that it is CUI, there's no mechanism under which you can challenge the labeling. You can, however, still file a FOIA request for that document, and I'll come back to that in a moment. We wanted there to be a system of internal audits. Well, that is a function of the CUI system. The executive order and the initial implementation guidance lay out that agencies have to do self-inspections and that ISOO has the authority to audit agencies' CUI systems. So we got auditing, which I think is an important aspect of maintaining control over the way that CUI is implemented in the agencies. We wanted to limit the number of people who had the authority to mark information as CUI. It's not currently part of the system. And we wanted to ensure that people who could mark documents as CUI, had the proper training to know what they were doing consistently. And thankfully, that is a part of the implementing guidance. And the CUI office has already released some training materials for CUI staff. So we also recommended that the CUI system prohibit relying on CUI labels in making FOIA determinations. So that one we got unequivocally. The executive order is very clear on this point, that the mere fact that information is labeled as CUI has no bearing on disclosure under FOIA. We also wanted to make sure that the CUI system did not restrict oversight by the judicial and legislative branches. Same clause of the executive order. CUI designations don't have any effect on disclosure to Congress or to the judiciary. So those are key features of the CUI system. Almost word for word, the way that we recommended them is the way that they ended up in the executive order. We wanted to create a separate office to oversee CUI that would not be part of ISU. Obviously, that one did not happen. I would argue, though, that perhaps in retrospect, it's actually better that it didn't. ISU has the institutional memory. It has established relationships. It has credibility so that when they go in to talk to agencies, agencies might actually listen to them. A new CUI office that was separate from ISU would have to establish all that. And, you know, in fact, I think I can speak for all of the organizations in the openness community that have been working on CUI when I say that we've had a very productive working relationship with the CUI office and ISU. Although we didn't get what we had recommended on this, I don't think any of us are concerned about that one not becoming true. We did also recommend that the office that had oversight get adequate funding. I think that remains a concern. You heard in the panel before lunch that funding for openness is an issue throughout the government. The CUI office, I think, is doing a very solid job with very few staff. And I think it's a concern, especially as we shift into the stage where this is more about rolling it out to the agencies, about whether a small handful of people, really how much they're going to be able to rein in what agencies are doing, especially when you think about the kind of resources and clout that somebody like the Defense Department or Homeland Security has. If they go up head-to-head, who's gonna win that argument? Although I will come back to this point as well in a moment. And we wanted the new CUI system to mandate transparency about how agencies implement CUI. And this one, I think, has been a mixed bag as well. Obviously, the executive order, the implementing guidance are available. Now the joint OIP and ISU memo is available, and you know that is that memo is really significant in terms of echoing and reinforcing the fact that FOIA determinations have to be made on the same basis that they've always been made, based on the law and not based on any CUI marking. We've heard that OMB recently reinforced to agencies in a memo that in their regulatory processes, they need to make sure that they're taking account of the CUI system. That memo that I've heard of has not yet been made public. I think it would be really positive for it to be made. I'm not sure if any of the OMB folks are here, if they all left with Lisa. But if anybody is in the sound of my voice within OMB, I would strongly recommend that in terms of the purposes of that memo, making it public is going to advance them because the purposes of that memo are to make sure that agencies know that the CUI system is out there and that they need to abide by it, and making the memo public is only going to call more attention to that. So most of the policy documents are available, not all, but most of them. The agency programs are still under development. Those are not available yet. Obviously, it's very important that when agencies finalize their programs, that the agency policies are made available to the public. And I think that there's some really important data that we're going to need, which is about how agencies use CUI. We know the scope and size of the classification world because agencies have to report what they classify. We don't have a clue the size and scope of the CUI world. And if there was one thing that I could change about CUI, it would be to require agencies to report what they label. Obviously, that's a big lift. It's a lot of work for agencies just to implement this new system, especially many of them that are not active players in the classification world, so a lot of these features are new to them. But I think that kind of reporting is really critical in terms of maintaining accountability. I'm going to quickly wrap up and say one thing that we did not expect is this rule that the Defense Department proposed last year. You know, one of the really important parts of the executive order is that CUI categories now, first of all, they have to be based on statute, regulation, or government-wide policy. And secondly, not only your agency has to think that you have a justification, but you have to prove to ISU that you have that justification. And in its work to date, the CUI office has done a very good job of filtering out unjustified categories. The proposed rule by the Defense Department could undo that if it were to move forward. Essentially, what the rule would do is take all of the legacy categories that defense used and wrap them into one bundle and enshrine it in regulation. If that happened, that would undo basically all the progress that we've made under the executive order by requiring categories to be transparent and for them to be justified. Thankfully, the noise that we've been hearing is that the rule is not going to be finalized in the way that it has been proposed, and the way that the Defense Department will ultimately move forward with it is going to be a much more limited manner and one that avoids entangling with the CUI system. So we've got some important work to do over the next year and going forward on fleshing out the guidance, the registry, the agency programs, putting in implementation deadlines. But I hopefully have given a sense of where we came from. And you know, in my view, the work on CUI reform that the Obama administration has done to date has been very responsive to the concerns of the open government community. Thanks.
Thank you, Sharon. Thank you, WCL, for having me. I'm very happy to be here. I wanted to talk a little bit about national security and privacy and its intersection with the CUI regime, because you often hear opposition to limiting CUI on the basis of endangering national security. However, as the ACLU and others have found, sharing information actually increases national security. In the post-9/11 world, the administration and Congress have repeatedly looked into the causes for 9/11 and some of the other terrorist attacks, and they have found that barriers to information sharing were a significant cause. They often found that information was in government's hands, however, it did not reach the proper people, the dots were not connected, and the problem wasn't so much that they weren't collecting enough information, but that it wasn't being accessed, processed, and put together by the proper people. So in this way, the CUI scheme will actually help improve security by making sure that information is shared to the appropriate people. This has been such a huge priority Congress created the Department of Homeland Security. They created the Director of National Intelligence, both with the point of coordinating these efforts better to keep information flowing and prevent these anti-terrorism and national security efforts from being completely cabined apart from each other and working in different areas. However, there are very few barriers to information sharing now in statute. It is also something that Congress and the administrations have done over the last 10 years. They have reduced the statutory barriers and have encouraged people to share information. To the extent that information isn't shared now, I think some of the folks have brought this up on the panel already, is largely cultural, and it is not mandated by law. And it's something that is very slow-moving, and even 10 years later is still a problem. If you look to some of the suspected terrorists who have been arrested over the last several years, you again see that information was given to the government that these individuals were threats. It was available, however, it was not shared with the proper authorities, and process and action was not taken. On the flip side, there are privacy benefits to having controls on information. Over the last 10 years, the government's authority to collect very sensitive and private information has grown exponentially, whether it's the Patriot Act, the FISA Amendments Act, amendments to the Attorney General guidelines. Couple that with the advent of technology and the ability to actually pull down the information now that it's in electronic form and the ability to store it and process it, actually our privacy is in much more danger than it ever has been. And that's where controls can actually be of benefit to the public. So the question isn't whether controls exist, but whether they are actually supported by logic and a good reason to limit the distribution of the information. And this is where the executive order and limiting this to the law, government-wide policy or regulation is absolutely critical. This is not a decision that should be made agency by agency or staff member by staff member. We've seen in the past that this results in over-control of information, which, although is separate from FOIA, the decisions there definitely bleed over into whether employees are releasing information to the public. By limiting it to law, regulation, or government-wide policy, you're better assuring that the controls have actually been approved by Congress, by someone at a high level in the administration, that those controls are public, and that there's accountability that they are being used properly. Perhaps one of the most important things that ISOO and NARA has done is its very short, one-page memo to the agencies that FOIA and CUI are not connected. I think that's something that will definitely have a lasting impact, and hopefully that will filter down to the folks who are actually processing FOIA requests, so that one of these CUI classifications do not prevent it from being released to the public. I think also what was interesting was something that John mentioned, and that is that ISOO is not sitting in judgment of these categories. They are just there to compile them, put them into a register, and enforce that information is only being controlled when it meets one of these classifications. To the extent that any of them are over-controlling information, that is something that needs to be addressed by statute or policy, and there are certainly areas that we in the openness community or the civil liberties community would like to see future changes, and in a way, creating this registry and regulating the CUI will help us do that to better focus our efforts on where information should be shared. So we look forward to seeing how this is implemented. We know it will be a monumental task, and that it is something that may take the entire second term of the Obama administration to do. And just watching over the last 10 years, especially how the national security apparatus has been slow to change and that it still has many cultural barriers, inside of it to information sharing. It seems like this will be certainly a task that ICU will have to stay on top of for a very long time.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to take moderator's prerogative here, and I'm going to ask one question to each of our panelists, and then I will open it up to all of you for your own questions. So I'm going to go through in the same order that they spoke. I'm going to start with John. And Gavin mentioned as part of his remarks a rulemaking procedure by the Department of Defense. And just to elaborate a little bit on that to set the stage, it was a rulemaking on safeguarding unclassified Department of Defense information. And this is something actually the Constitution Project filed comments in opposition to. We saw this as sort of an end run around the executive order, whether deliberate or through cluelessness, we don't know. But what it was doing would have basically grandfathered in all of the old categories. And the executive order says law, regulation, and government-wide policy. Well, if you grandfather them in by regulation, are they then, is ICU then required to accept them because now there's a regulation grandfathering in all those old categories? So this is very troubling to us. We filed comments, and we know that ICU also got involved, and we're hoping for a good result here, and I think that John may be able to update us with some promising developments in that regard.
Sure. Thanks, Sharon. And I think in doing so, I'd like to link it to the other mention that Gavin made, which was about an OMB. It was actually an email sent out around to reinforce a focused on the CUI executive order, and I'll comment on that as well. But you correctly characterize the rule as having made quite the splash, the proposed rule as having made quite the splash, and it was, fortunate or not, on or about the time that I came into office. And so I was sort of learning to spell CUI and also reading these headlines and getting approached not only by new friends like Sharon and other folks represented here, but a significant voice also from across industry who organized themselves well and early to express the complications of implementing a rule as it was proposed. The dialogue that then ensued, I think, is an example of what can happen when enough people rally and pay attention and try to find a successful way ahead and not simply kill a proposed rule. This proposed rule had been in multiple incarnations for a couple of years within the Department of Defense, and as we sort of peeled the onion, we found that its primary impetus was to raise the level of protection on unclassified systems that process DoD information. And as we engaged in with all the stakeholders on this, including the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, which oversees the large process by which the rulemaking happens, OIRA, in particular Nick Fraser, who was here earlier in the day, and other folks in White House counsel, to say, here's what we think they're trying to do. The way they are expressing themselves is going to run headlong into the COI program the way Sharon framed it. And so can we remind everybody that there is already the CUI executive order? The president has expressed his desire and direction for how unclassified information is to be controlled. This proposed rule is in opposition to that, and so back to the drawing board. And back to the drawing board folks indeed went with the recognition that now OFPP, OIRA, the CUI office, were going to be involved in what was largely in a DOD acquisition-centric policy. And so to date, the ATNL folks and the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence folks who are primary architects of this policy have taken it back to try to express it in terms of systems and not to attach it to types of information so that there is not a collision with category or not, that they're not creating some blanket which runs contrary to the category subcategory taxonomy that we've set up. So we are hopeful. We've seen and continue the dialogue around the way that rule will come back out. And this lesson, if you will, led directly to the email that that Gavin made mention. It was not a memo, but an email to the leadership and practitioner level folks within the rulemaking across the executive branch to say, okay, we've had this experience. You are reminded that Executive Order 13556 gives explicit direction as to how we are to deal with any attempt to regulate around safeguarding or dissemination controls on unclassified information. We will consult, and you should too, the CUI office in NARA when proposing any such rule. I agree with Gavin. It's an important thing. It's much like the OIP co-issuance sets some important executive branch level announcements about the way we intend to conduct business, and we've got the backing of the White House in that. And so I'm hopeful that when we see that rule and it goes back through the next comment round, it will be received as something that can be implemented.
Thank you. Okay, my next question is for Pat, who's been heading up the on-the-ground effort to reach out to the agencies and move forward with the implementation and develop the categories. And so my question for you is, what are the biggest barriers you see going forward? But in particular, do you see a barrier with agency attitudes to this new system? Lisa Ellman at lunch talked about ingrained agency cultures as sometimes being a barrier to openness efforts. And I'm wondering what your experience has been and your prediction going forward for that.
I think the biggest, if I could be very, very open with you all, the biggest barrier, I think, is to maintain our executive agency. And what I mean by that is that we need to deal with the needs of agencies that are not just in the national security community or the diplomatic community or the intelligence community, but throughout the executive branch. There's a tremendous amount of information that we are actually talking about. When you think about it, let me give you one example of something that comes under the program, your tax returns. When you think about it, any sort of marking regime that we come up with, any sort of safeguarding regime or requirements that we come up with have to address the business of the government, and we can't bring that to a halt. And so while one part of the government that is used to keeping things at a very high level and safeguarding at a very high level and marking at a very stringent way may advocate a certain point of view on something, there are many sections of the government that deal with privacy information, for example, your privacy information, your medical information, your tax information, that need to have uniform rules that they can live with and that won't bring their business processes to a halt. So as executive agent, we have to deal with these problems and come up with solutions in dialogue with the executive branch. And we have to maintain a perspective. And we have to maintain a perspective that does look exactly to what you're talking about, information sharing. And part of this is paying attention to the goals, but also to the process. Because the process has to be even-handed, fundamentally. Can't go off someplace with a select group of people and develop something, because that's not listening to all the voices. So if you're asking me that about the most significant barrier that we're going to face this year, I think that's probably number one.
Thank you. Okay, Gavin. You mentioned that one of the things or two of the things that OMB Watch's effort had called for that you didn't see were some of these, enforcement mechanisms, some challenge procedures. And also when you look at the registry now that we have it out, the sort of level of information that's in it, do you feel like going forward the public or the openness community will have enough information to be able to help be a check on whether these categories continue to be appropriate and appropriately implemented, and what concerns or recommendations do you have in that area?
Sure. Well, first I should note that the concerns about the enforcement mechanisms are in a way lessened because of how clear and how strong the executive order, the implementing guidance, and the ISU-OIP memo have been on making clear that CUI markings do not determine disclosure under FOIA, discretionary disclosure, or any other law that governs how information can be shared or disclosed. That CUI markings essentially are labels. They tell you what the information is, and the rules that govern how that information has to be handled are based pre-existing the CUI label. So, you know, it's been a long-standing fact of law that tax returns are not available to the public to view. That's not an invention of the CUI system. The CUI system just lets you know that that's what the law is that applies to this particular piece of paper that contains somebody's tax return. Basically, in terms of making sure that CUI doesn't bleed over and reduce transparency, the efforts to date have been as strong as they really could be. There's still going to be concerns about implementation once we get to that phase and whether agencies follow these extremely clear rules or whether they don't. But in a sense, because the distinction between CUI and FOIA has been so clearly drawn, these concerns about making sure that the categories are extremely narrow and that the information that goes into these categories is extremely limited is actually a bit, the pressure is off a bit because of how clearly that line has been drawn.
Thank you. So, Michelle, one of the concerns that you and your colleague, Mike German, who is also from the ACLU, worked on this advocacy effort, have talked about all along, is trying to make sure that the CUI regime doesn't end up being what we would call a fourth level of classification, right? The classification has, you know, three levels, and CUI is supposed to promote information sharing and not become that. So just looking at what we have now, with still waiting for development of safeguarding measures and decontrol measures, do you have any thoughts or specific recommendations on going forward how we can make sure that this system continues to avoid that? It's a promising sign so far, but any advice in that regard?
Well, I think the key to this will be the outside oversight. I think if you look at how the classification system has gone, it has spiraled out of control. People are overclassifying. The amount of people with security clearance is actually astounding now. It's up to 4 million people. And so these programs, when left to their devices in agencies, they absolutely spiral out of control. So I think the number one thing you can do is to make sure that NARA and ISU are regularly involved in conducting oversight. We would also hope that Congress does weigh in on this and do oversight itself too. There's been legislation in the past on controlled, on classified information also, number of information sharing issues, and so we would hope they would weigh in to make sure that this is being implemented properly and that the right balance is being struck.
Thank you. So I'd like to open it up now for questions from the audience. I gather the protocol is to come up to the microphones. I will ask you to please identify yourself before you ask a question, and also to please actually ask a question. Liza?
Hi. Liza Goitzen from the Brennan Center. I have two questions, so I'll try to be very quick. The first one is, I think it may be counterintuitive for a lot of people here that a stamp that indicates that certain controls have to be put on information could somehow facilitate the sharing of information. So I was hoping maybe one of you could explain that. And then the second one, and so that's asking a question without me actually explaining it. So I asked a question. And the second question I had is that I agree with everyone here that it is important and good that a CUI designation cannot be equated with a FOIA exemption. But what about the converse? If a document would clearly have to be released under the FOIA. What could be, what would be the justification for any regulation or government-wide policy or statute to restrict in some way or control the handling of that information? And maybe if one of you could just give an example of a kind of information that does not fall under any FOIA exemption but is still properly subject to some kind of CUI control. Thank you.
Okay, I think I'm going to give John and Pat the first crack at those two.
All right. Well, a couple of different things about the counterintuitive part and markings. The purpose of the markings, I mean, I can put it simply, is to tell you this is what you've got to do not to break the law when you handle this information. And the way it promotes information sharing is, well, look at the current system that we have right now. The agency policy that generally governs the marking that is put on this information right now, or information that is controlled, may not be, by the way, based on a law or government-wide policy or regulation, but might be just something very agency-specific. But let's assume it is based on a law, regulation, government-wide policy. There is usually an agency reg that governs some specific procedures that implements that law, regulation, government-wide policy, generally not available to the public or the people that they're sharing the information with. And so you may end up in a situation where a couple different things happen. A reticence to share because there's, we don't know how they're going to handle this information when we share it with them. Or the mishandling of that information. So what this program essentially does is to provide uniform standards that are indicated through the markings, so that agencies then, and this is what we are aiming for, agencies when they need to share and want to share are encouraged to share because they know that the information is going to be handled appropriately in accordance with the law, the regulation, government-wide policy. And those regulations, and this is part of the executive order, are going to be openly available. They're going to be online. It's the whole purpose of the registry, to go online and to have to be able to know the universe of information that should be properly controlled. And it's the whole reason for these regs and for these markings in the future to be online as well, so that all the information sharing partners, not just within the federal government but beyond the federal government, are going to know what the rules are. That promotes information sharing. Right now, when information is shared, you have an open door. Someone marks something, they send it off, and they think that everyone knows what their agency regs actually say about this. That's kind of an iffy business. Or they don't want to share it because, gee, those people don't know how to handle our stuff, or I don't know what goes on over there. So that's part of the, yeah, I guess, you know, it may seem counterintuitive, but actually the markings are a tool. It's how you use the tool, really. If you misuse it, yeah, of course it's going to be barrier to information sharing. But you can use the tool in a good way, and that's what we're trying to do. That's what the executive order is all about. It's to, that's the meaning of reform. The reform of, and we've been using CUI here, you know, to talk about what we have right now. Let's, the way the order is framed and the way the administration talks about it, they talk about the SBU system. That's what we got, sensitive but unclassified system. That sort of refers to the 107 different policies and various markings that exist right now, the patchwork. What we're moving towards is a reform, which is called CUI. The reform is CUI. So, anyway.
Does anyone else want to add something or answer the second question, which is something that would clearly not fit in a FOIA exemption but still might be CUI?
So rather than give a specific example, because I think one of the points is
The question that FOIA asks is about release and availability of a particular, more focused set of information. And the distinction that's made in the guidance is that that is a discretionary decision made at some point in time. Information, whether it was or is still CUI, doesn't alter the way you make that decision. And so information in general can be identified as controllable. If it falls into this authorized category, and an example might be relative to the protection of presidents and vice presidents, there's certain information that is protected in advance of when something happens, and then after it happens and it happens publicly, it's no longer protected. And so there's a timeline associated with that kind of information. There are other aspects related to that information that might be FOIA exemptions, who's involved, and so forth. And so it becomes layered. And so when a particular request comes in, you have to look at it from the releasability of that within the FOIA frame. And the order is explicit to say, in its CUI status, really doesn't enter into that part of the decision. And I think you could find an example in every CUI category, and you could probably find you probably map FOIA exemptions against most of them the other way. But I think it's that question of discretion and release that apply in the FOIA context. And CUI is about, first and foremost, the aggregate and a consistency applying to all, but specific requested bits of information then get plucked out of that and examined in the FOIA lens.
And if I could, within that the context of that explanation, I think these words really bring home the message. It's from that joint issuance that came out of ISU and OIP, in November. And these are the very words: decisions to disclose or withhold information must be made based on the applicability of the statutory exemptions contained in the FOIA, not on a COI marking or designation. I mean, it's as clear as it can be, I think.
Gavin wanted to add something on this.
Yeah, one way of maybe helping people understand is to answer sort of the opposite of Liza's second question, which is, so if CUI isn't about what you can't disclose, what is it about? What does a CUI label say if it doesn't say, don't disclose this? So I'll give an example. One of the subcategories is statistical census. I worked as a census taker, so I know what the census takers are told to do with the information that they collect. There are specific handling requirements in terms of you can't leave it out somewhere where somebody might see it. You can't leave it on your desk. You can't leave it on the seat of your car. If you leave it in your car, you have to lock your car. You can't give it to other branches of the government. So there's all these kinds of information that about how the information has to be handled, which don't have to do with FOIA in any way. So hopefully that might help give people an idea of sort of what CUI says if it's not just about disclosure.
Okay, next question.
Well, there was a. Could I take a stab at that one?
Please.
All right. I think I know where that's coming from. I think that one of the recommendations of the presidential task force that examined CUI reform and examined the policy of the previous administration regarding CUI, addressed the definition of CUI. And there had been what appeared to be a very precise definition of CUI that had been made by the previous administration. in the May 2008 memorandum from President Bush. And within the context of the CUI framework, as it was called, that more precise definition was that it was terrorism-related information within the information-sharing environment. And on the face of it, that would appear to be a very precise definition. And the task force recommended that, in fact, the definition be, actually the scope of the definition become broader. Now, why would that be so? Because the problem in that definition, and concise definitions along those lines, is that they don't lend themselves to implementation. What is terrorism-related information? What is terrorism-related information may not be terrorism-related information tomorrow, or what we are handling as information that we don't think is terrorism-related right now, all of a sudden becomes, in the course of events, terrorism-related information. It becomes very, very spongy, actually, the more precise we get with these definitions. And what the attempt here in opening up the scope and changing the entire basis for looking at the definition of CUI was, in fact, to lend itself to what is actually done within the government, that information is properly controlled on the basis of a law, a regulation, and a government-wide policy. And I would put it to you that that scope is, in fact, the proper one. It encompasses information that is properly controlled within the government. And by avoiding these types of definition, in fact, we lend ourselves to proper implementation and proper information sharing. So that would be my best answer to you.
Okay, next question.
I think Pat did a fine job describing a challenge within the interagency environment, and I think that I would also put that first on my list. I think certain aspects of this are about the content, getting the right words on the page, getting the right definitions in place so that agencies can implement, and certain of them are about the process. How can we ensure that all affected agencies are heard from, that one constituency doesn't dominate the end product? And I think we have to find the balance between both. That process issue, I think we've, and I really appreciate the feedback that we've heard today in terms of the guidance that's already been issued, because I think it helps us understand that we've taken a broad to narrower approach, get things right at the big picture level, and then tighten it down to things that will directly affect agency behavior. We're at the point where managing expectations is critical. We've gone from broad, and we've pretty much said, okay, we've got the landscape set right now. This particular hill needs to look like this, and this particular valley needs to look like this, and people have to be able to live there. And that's the hard part of the year that's ahead, and that's where the real shirt sleeves rolling up is going to happen in this interagency process. And so we have to keep this balance between making the process produce the right content and then making sure that the content that's produced is actually implementable. And that's, you know, it's a very bureaucratized kind of an issue, but this life in Washington.
and it's the challenge that we've got in front of us.
Yeah, and I guess it's may come out of my upbringing, but the means do not justify the end does not justify the means. That the means and the end have to be consistent with one another. And if you really want to be an executive agent and hear all voices, that really has to be what you do. And I think the best policy, implementation policy, that comes out of this whole process will be one in which we hear all voices, consider the options, and then do our best to be true to that executive order in sifting through all of that. And that's been a very difficult task up to now. And I can tell you that the only reason why I think we've succeeded is because we have dedicated staff. And staff who's willing to put in extra hours. And I think we've been inventive in the way we've done things, making up for shortfalls in resourcing. And I can tell you right now that the amount of legal research, and I say this as maybe an advertisement, but I can tell you that we had two extremely dedicated staff members, Carla Reiner and Brian Oakland, who were very much involved in tremendous amounts of work researching statutes and regulations, government-wide policies, in preparation for and when we got the submissions from the agencies. But on top of this, we were able to attract the services of two interns who were law students. They found the prospects of working in a high-paced, challenging government office, learning the elements of a groundbreaking reform, very, very tantalizing, who were also willing to put in the time. And I think that's why we were able to deliver a registry of the most commonly used subcategories and categories of information in the government on time, on November 4th, exactly 1 year from the issuance of that order.
Okay, thank you. I see the clock says our time is up, and Dan has stood up to indicate that as well. And it sounds like Pat is putting out an ad for all of you students who want summer internships. See them. And if you would join me now in thanking the panelists. John has something else
to
say.
I'd like to do one thing, and that's to break a rule, which is to answer a question not asked. When they teach you to sort of testify before the Congress, they always say, listen to the question, answer the question asked, and stop.
You must not be from OMB, sir.
Yeah. But there's one thing that's been mentioned a couple of times today that's within not the CUI bailiwick, but the larger ISU bailiwick, and that's the Fundamental Classification Guidance Review. Amy mentioned it in her comments, Liza, and Nate Jones snuck out before he could hear this. But I wanted to just say I appreciate the interest in that, and I think it was correctly framed in the discussions earlier today as to whether or not agencies dedicate the appropriate level of resource and get the results that are desired in that review that's required by Executive Order 13526. Agencies were actually given 2 years to do that based on the executive order, and that assignment homework is due in June of this year. We in ISU get progress reports from agencies, and I know some of them have been made public, and I think that I encourage that and commented upon in the press. Coincidentally to coming here yesterday, I put the final edits on guidance to agencies on what to include in their final reports. It's important to note that the executive order required that an unclassified summary of that review be created by each agency. I have, in this guidance, asked that agencies make that public on their website and stated the intent that ISU will do that on in the aggregate so that you can have a look at what agencies contend their review accomplished. I also provide some guidance to agencies of what to include in their report so they don't simply say, here's what we think we did, but so we get some consistent reporting from all agencies on the number of guides that they had, the number that they found eliminated, and some estimation of what, how much information that would previously have been classified will not be in the future. Trying to get at a final result and the ability to have dialogue around whether or not that was an effective exercise and whether there's more to do. So I did want to provide a little update there and say watch this space until the final reports are due in the end of the year. I can't promise that there'll be any sort of comprehensive reporting on that. But there has been intermittent reporting on it in the past, and I think that's fine. I would also say that having the inside view on what agencies are doing in that program, and particularly in what intelligence agencies are doing, I would not share the characterization that was stated earlier today that somehow intelligence agencies are doing less or putting less effort into this. And so I am keeping the eyes on agencies from all constituencies and hoping that that everybody delivers.
Thank you for that extra content, John, all the more so because Pat has told me privately several times now in the last year or so that national security classification, that part of ISU's area of responsibility, is almost as important. Not quite, but almost as important as CUI. So that just speaks to how significant it is to let people know as to where things stand. And let me thank all of you for a very incisive panel for a difficult subject, to be sure. This is not a run-of-the-mill subject in the least, and especially to John and Pat for not only doing such good work, but being so readily agreeable to come here and be open about that so that everyone can understand the good work that you're doing and what they can look forward to in the future. So how about a round of applause just one more time for such a good panel? And we'll take just